You're listening to a 3CR podcast recorded in the 3CR Community Radio Studio in Melbourne, Australia. If you like what you hear, please consider donating or subscribing so we can keep bringing you more independent community content. For more information, go to 3cr.org.au.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Out of the Blue on 3CR Community Radio. I'm Lauren.
And I'm Mimi, and we're joining you today from Wurundjeri country. We'd like to pay our respects to elders past and present and recognise the traditional custodians' ongoing care for this country for tens of thousands of years. Sovereignty was never ceded. This always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
So on today's show, we're chatting about ocean literacy. And I haven't really thought about the ocean in terms of literacy before, but it sounds like a really interesting way of looking at it.
Yeah, I mean, me neither, to be honest. And yeah, it was really interesting speaking with this week's guest, Dr. Prue Francis, about this idea of ocean literacy. Prue is a researcher and senior lecturer in marine science at Deakin University, and she specializes in both seaweed cultivation and ocean literacy. I was really keen to ask Prue about what it means for us to become a more ocean literate society as a whole, and how can we talk about the ocean and the climate with children and young people to help the next generation build their connection to water as well.
Cool. So should we get into it then?
Yeah, let's do it. This is Prue.
Hi, Dr. Prue Francis. Really excited to have you on Out of the Blue today. Thanks so much for joining us. I'd love to start with having you introduce yourself and just telling us a little bit about the work you do.
Yeah, thanks, Mimi. Thanks for having me on the program. My name's Prue. I'm a marine scientist at Deakin University, and I'm based at the Queenscliff Marine Science Centre, at the southern end of Port Phillip Bay. And so a lot of my research that I'm currently looking at, I've got sort of two hats. One is in kelp restoration and cultivation, and the other one is ocean literacy, which is a new emerging field here in Australia, and it's building a lot of momentum. So it's an exciting field of research to be part of.
And if you're happy to share, I'd love to hear a little bit about your own story in connection to the ocean. Did you grow up always kind of learning a lot about the ocean and being really interested in it from a young age, or what was your kind of story with it?
Yeah, so my hometown is Kyabram, which is a regional town up in northern Victoria. So it's about a 3-4 hour drive from the nearest coastal area. So I always like to say that somehow I travelled downstream to find my connection to the ocean. But I think it really began as a child. I was always fascinated by water. So my closest water was often in channels, irrigation channels, but also the iconic Murray River, the Goulburn River. We spent a lot of time growing up camping along those bodies of water. So I love being around the water, in the water. It always made me feel good to be around that. So I think I had that connection to water from such a young age. But in terms of the ocean, it really started when I was probably around 14 years of age, and my family and I was very lucky to travel around Australia for 6 months in a caravan. And during that time is when we spent a lot of time hugging the coastline, and so getting to swim in the ocean. I got to snorkel on the Great Barrier Reef and the Ningaloo Reef, and it really just changed my perception. I could finally see the bottom of the water, and not only could I see what was underneath the water, it was a whole different life there for me to explore and see these different relationships and behaviours that I couldn't see when you were swimming in the river or an irrigation channel back home. So it just fascinated me, and I wanted to know more. And I remember saying to my parents at the time that that's my career. I'm going to be a marine biologist one day, and followed that pursuit for my bachelor and did a PhD, and has sort of followed that pathway ever since.
Wow, what an epic experience at 14. Good on your parents for giving you that opportunity.
Very lucky.
So when we're talking about ocean literacy, I think you said it's kind of an emerging field. I'd love to know, what are we really talking about when we use that term? What does it kind of involve?
Yeah, so the term itself, I mean, as it implies, you know, to be literate of something. So there is a little bit of a problematic word and how you interpret what ocean literacy is. But at the moment, the definition is our understanding of the ocean and its influence on us and our influence on the ocean. And to sort of dive deeper into that, it's just, you know, I always like to say to people, it's how we connect to the ocean. We've all got different ways of how we connect, but understanding ultimately that, say, if I like to walk along the beach and that's my connection, but somebody else might say, well, I don't even really like to go to the beach, so what's my connection? Understanding that we are connected in some sort of way, whether it's through the clothes that we're wearing that might have arrived to Australia through a shipping pathway, there is some sort of connection that we have to the ocean, whether we realise it's direct or indirect. And so ocean literacy plays a part in trying to build that better connection with people, to understand it, in the hope that we can protect it, conserve it, and sustainably utilize it as a resource moving forward. And data is suggesting that we don't know a lot about our ocean if you're not in that marine science field. And so trying to connect more of the community with that knowledge and with that awareness so that they can make those informed decisions moving forward and help protect and conserve the ocean into the future.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like that's something we talk about a bit on Out of the Blue, that idea that everyone has a connection to the water in their own way, and trying to kind of have that connection between the experts and the activists and people working really closely with water, with community, and being able to think about what it means for them. So yeah, I think that's really exciting that you're working in this space. And I get the sense that there's kind of a bit of a growing focus on this space, and that you've been really involved in research as well as advocacy on this topic. Why do you think this is gaining momentum and kind of becoming more of a focus? What makes it so important right now?
Yeah, I think, globally, it's building momentum. So we've just had our UNOC over in France recently, and ocean literacy was talked about a lot there. And so often it's been in the past a concept that's been driven by our colleagues internationally. And here in Australia, despite being a marine nation, and we've got a whole suite of different marine education programs or marine initiatives that folks can get engaged with, we often haven't collectively called it ocean literacy. And so I think that's sort of where we've been doing well in that space for so many years, but actually bringing it together where we've got practitioners of ocean literacy, but also now a growing body of researchers, bringing us together in this coordinated fashion to think about how, as a nation, do we put this as a strategy moving forward? Like, how can we actually bring us all together and go, well, this is what's currently happening, this is where we need to go into the future, so that we can build that strategy and help align with changing climate and the pressures that the ocean is facing now. And I guess with our recent events that we're seeing, Northern Great Barrier Reef, Ningaloo, having coral bleaching over the last few months and seeing the devastating impact there. Down in our southern area, we're seeing the harmful algal bloom impacting the South Australia coastline. So these climate emergencies are happening more regularly now. And as a nation, we need to start being proactive about that instead of reactive. And ocean literacy plays a huge role in building that knowledge and that data and connecting the community with the scientific community to build that trust and that be transparent of what we're finding from a science point of view, and communicating that back to the community. And that's where that ocean literacy can play a role. And so from a research perspective, we're trying to find ways of how to build that connection better. What are some really good ways to communicate data to the public? What are some great workshops or interventions that we can create that can build that ocean literate society moving forward? And so that's where their field is emerging at the moment, is trying to build that better conduit between the different stakeholders and user groups of the ocean.
Yeah, and I feel like that's such an important piece of the puzzle, I guess, how you communicate that information in ways that people can connect with and understand how much it affects them and relates to their lives. I'm really interested in the kind of intersection of art with climate activism and advocacy and research. I think creative arts can be such a powerful and meaningful way for people to learn and connect with other human experiences and environmental and the kind of more than human experiences and stories as well. I saw that you co-authored a children's book, The Great Southern Reef, and also use some other kind of creative activities in your education work. I'd love to know, what is it about storytelling and creative strategies like writing a children's book that kind of draws you to use these methods as part of that communication?
Yeah, that's a huge converter to the transdisciplinary approach to communicating about the ocean. And so what that means is bringing the science, bringing an artist, and communicating it in a different way to what our traditional method would be as a scientist, which would be a research paper or a communication written piece. But artist and storytelling is a more engaging way, bringing that knowledge in a way that's not as obvious that you're doing so. And so it could be through the visual storytelling of a children's picture book and through the words explaining what that visual picture looks like to sort of resonate with people in a different way. And perhaps with that the picture book for as an example, it shows children walking along the beach and finding different curiosities that get washed up. And perhaps somebody reading that might recognize some of those items that they've seen at their local beach. And that's then building that connection in a different way, instead of perhaps having to read a research paper or a textbook and trying to identify that particular item that got washed up on the beach. So it's a nice way without being, I guess, too obvious that they're learning about a science particular angle. I've also been working with some artists in ways of communicating about the kelp restoration work that we've been doing as well. And that's been a really eye-opener experience for me to know that I do a lot of public speaking. And so communicating my research through an artistic angle and having these brilliant artists interpret it in a different way and bring a different audience to connect with the kelp restoration has been phenomenal. And I think moving forward, if we are going to try to be more ocean literate and talk about the ocean, we've got to do it in different ways. And storytelling and art is going to be pivotal in that solution. And particularly thinking about our communities that don't live near the coast, or people that may not be able to access the ocean in the same way that I can access the ocean. I'm very privileged to be able to go snorkeling and swimming, and so I can see what's underneath, and a lot of people might not be able to do that. So how can we bring that experience that I can have to somebody that can't, and how can they build that same a connection in a different way? So thinking outside the box of how we communicate that not only the beauty of the ocean, but also the threats and the challenges that it's facing, to sort of help people understand of what they can do in their everyday life to help contribute towards protecting and conserving.
Mm, yeah, that makes so much sense. I'd love to know more about what the impact has been for people who, for example, have maybe interacted with some of the arts outcomes you were talking about around kelp restoration, or have you had any feedback from families who've used the book in their kind of learning about the ocean? Like, how has that kind of resonated with people?
Yeah, so with the book specifically, I do have quite a lot of evidence of the impact that that's had, which is fantastic. And so that book has been part of a body of work or research work that we've been working on at Deakin University, and Katia Freitas, Dr. Katia, led a lot of that work. And so that was looking at ways that picture books can teach about the ocean in a primary school setting. And so we were able to upscale Katia's work from her PhD into delivering that program across 100 schools in Port Phillip Bay. And we have impact from those schools of using that book, and some lovely schools have even reached out to myself and co-author Paul Venzo to write us stories and tell us about their experiences of the Great Southern Reef and their favourite marine animal.
Wow.
But then also, which has been lovely, pitching what we should write for our next book about the Great Southern Reef. sort of, we've got those wonderful ideas from lots of children around Victoria of what we should do for book number two, and just creating this pen pal experience in exchange. But then also I've gone to different schools and talked about the Great Southern Reef because they've read the book, or they've been developing specific science activities or creative storytelling themselves in that school setting. So it's been a wonderful resource from that point of view. And then inspiring older children, so maybe late primary or early secondary, to create their own stories as well, to become a storyteller. And that's been fantastic. And then from the Kelp Restoration, the art that we've been doing, see the impact of people wanting to know more. So we do have been engaged to do a lot of beach walk. We're walking on the beach and talking about seaweed and the restoration and the issues that our local kelp are facing. And that's, you know, I guess the impact of there has just been more events and more opportunities to talk about what we've been doing in that space. And so quite often I'm talking at community groups that about the project and various workshops and what have you around to sort of show that impact. So I think getting out into the community is super important to talk about what we've been doing and hearing other people's perceptions of their own experience going down to their local environment, and perhaps seeing the kelp or the ecosystem change over time has, and knowing that something's been done about it, I think really resonates with quite a lot of people, which has been great. And we've been receiving that feedback quite a bit too.
Fantastic. And so exciting to hear about that kind of transdisciplinary approach and how it can take different types of people with different skills to work together to kind of help people understand these like sometimes quite complex ideas. I think in all of that work, it sounds like you've kind of been on your own journey in terms of learning not just how to be an amazing marine scientist, but also how to communicate the things that you're learning in your research with all these different audiences. I'm wondering, do you have any advice for people who are wanting to help kind of raise ocean literate children and young people and for families? I'm also thinking kind of about climate anxiety and the challenges for young people at the moment who are growing up in managing emotions around the reality of climate crisis, especially with some of these really devastating climate events at the moment. Do you have any advice for talking about these issues in age-appropriate ways and kind of helping to nurture that generation of ocean literate young people?
Yeah, that's a really good point. And eco or climate anxiety is real. And I think we all need to make sure we're looking after it, yourself and each other in the space of, you know, what we are seeing on the news and in the articles and in the data, and recognizing that those feelings. But in terms of how you communicate that to children, how do you help children navigate through those feelings? I think it's really important for them to understand what is happening, but then also making sure that there's some blue hope in that communication as well. And so whilst, you know, you might have a ecological event that's happening that is being devastating, knowing that there are scientists that are out there monitoring and helping to obtain that data so that into the future we can be proactive about how we might go about protecting some of those threatened species if this event was to occur again, or even looking at the context of what we've been doing in the restoration space with kelp, is the main issue in Port Phillip Bay was the overabundance of purple sea urchin that have been feeding or overgrazing on our golden kelp. And so what we've been able to do there, that again, if that overwhelming sense of, oh, our kelp are declining, what should we do about it? There are researchers and scientists out there that are trying to either get baseline data or come up with cool new innovative techniques to help mitigate or contribute to some of the solutions and challenges that the ocean's facing. So I think often we see in the news is the devastating impacts of our environment, which I think we need to engage with. But we also need to look at the ways that there are these really innovative, cool ideas that are getting put out there that also need to be celebrated, that it's not just doom and gloom. There is people working in that space to try and overcome these challenges. So I was trying to find that balance in that storytelling, I think, is the way forward, and making inspiring children to, you know, if you were a scientist right about now, what could you do to help with this? And they can start to sort of have that problem solving thinking right at that early age, and of how they could tackle that problem if they were a scientist or an engineer or an oceanographer, whatever it might be, that they can start to sort of think, you know, I can be part of those solutions in the future.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And it's kind of empowering as well, that way, that it's something that they can be part of, that we can all be part of.
Yeah, for sure.
We're almost out of time, but I'd love to just end with asking if you have any ideas about kind of what the vision is for the future. Are there any kind of, I guess, signs that we'll know we're on the right track, that we're kind of on the way towards a more ocean literate culture?
Yeah, it's a great question, and a very timely one, I should add, because my PhD student, Consuelo, is about to deploy Australia's first ocean literacy baseline survey. Wow. So that is a survey, a bunch of questions that have been developed by colleagues in Canada, and we are using those questions, and we've also added our own Australian specific ones to that suite. And that will be going out to a sample size of 2,000 people around Australia, and making sure that we're getting folks from all across our states and territories. And that will be our first baseline to sort of understand where we are at. And the idea would be that we can have a check-in point at various times across the years to see whether we are improving from that particular survey. So this survey has already been deployed across, I think it's over 10 different countries now, and there is an online platform that you can go to see the results of those surveys across those different countries. So the idea is that this survey will also be put onto that platform, so Australia can be part of that global overview or health point check about ocean literacy, and see, hopefully we can deploy this in a couple of years' time again to see if we're starting to see potentially some of the interventions or the improvements that we're trying to do in ocean literacy here in Australia improve into the future. So I guess that's sort of the vision, and what we're hoping to do as a collective body of folks working in ocean literacy in Australia is to come together and form an ocean literacy coalition. And part of that coalition's agenda and priority will be to develop Australia's first national ocean literacy strategy, which help inform what we need to do to become more ocean literate. And it will use that baseline survey to sort of help build on what that strategy will look like. And this is off the base of other countries also having strategies. So it's not a new concept. We can use what the other countries have done in the past as a bit of a template or a draft to build on what specifically Australia needs to sort of move ocean literacy into the future.
You're listening to Out of the Blue on 3CR. That was Dr. Prue Francis on her work on ocean literacy. I hope you enjoyed hearing from her. I'm feeling really inspired and, I guess, hopeful hearing about the work that's being done in this area, I think.
Yeah, and Prue has a website, www.pruefrancis.com, and you can also find updates on her LinkedIn. Prue is also happy for folks to get in touch via email if you have any ideas you want to follow up on. And as always, you can find our podcast at 3cr.org.au/radioblue. And you can also follow our Facebook page, Out of the Blue, for updates.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast. If you found it valuable, please consider donating or subscribing to support independent community radio. To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au.